Get the latest sports in 1 hour. It's Crunch Time, weekdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
Let's do it!
Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig. Yo! Made it to a 5 o'clock hour on a Monday after a vacation. These are the type of things I don't generally take for granted. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hope you had a great Christmas. Hope New Year's pending is going to go well for you. More importantly, I hope it goes well for me. Were you in town for the holiday? Was it a jolly holiday?
I was out of town. I went to Rockaway Beach to my girlfriend's parents' house.
Where the hell is Rockaway Beach? On Long Island?
It is, no, the other side of the country. It's just north of Tillamook.
Wow, I don't even think I knew that. I would have definitely recognized that.
Because
that's a Ramones song.
Rockaway Beach?
Yeah.
There's also plenty of places that are north of Tillamook as well.
Yeah, well, like the rest of the Earth and Canada and Alaska.
Decent amount of Earth.
All right. What's the opening lyrics to Rockaway Beach? Chewing out of rhythm, I'm a bubble gum. Sun is out, I want some. It's not hard to reach. We can hit your ride to Rockaway Beach. That's a Ramones song for you. Highly intellectual and with a lot of depth. All right, welcome back. Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. In about 5 minutes after I go into another Ramones diatribe, we'll get to Kelly Graves and talk some hoops. That'll be about 10 minutes after the hour. I do want to point out, of course, getting in Rose Bowl mode, had a great talk with Warren Williamson of Oregon Duck Football News, who was live on the scene, was part of Media Day, had some good one-on-one time with guys like Justin Herbert, CJ Verdell, Shane Lemieux, shared those thoughts. Cool stuff. Obviously, with all of our interviews, we'll post that. As far as the NFL, the playoffs are all set, kind of a wild finish with everybody playing for the first time all year on one Sunday to wrap things up. They don't want, you know, heading into the playoffs, they don't want one team with an extra day off or a Monday night game. And, of course, the Sunday nighter, which they flexed to, turned out to be quite the capper to the 2019 regular season. As far as Oregon, you know, they have Wisconsin listed as about a field goal favorite, yet ESPN, and I saw on CBS, they give the Ducks a 54 to 55% chance to win the game, which is kind of strange. Never ignore the odds makers, but most of the people are getting, and by the way, it's not like somebody saying this is crazy, it's going to be a waltz. Wisconsin's a very good team with a good defense, and a guy at quarterback in Cohn who's more stabilizing than kind of lighted up, and of course Jonathan Taylor is every bit of that. He's fantastic. But there's been a lot of talk in recent years. Of course, here, the local angle has been, you know, the sellout streak that started, I think, in 1999, ended in 2016. And around the country, college football has seen, you know, fan attendance dip a little bit. And this year, conferences around America saw record declines. I don't know if you're aware, an uptick, as Kevin Wade of 24/7 Sports wrote a good article about it. You could catch it on his Twitter account, at KWadeSays. That's where I got it. So the average fan attendance this year was 53,600. So 500 fans per game up from last year. And, you know, the home games this year were less than scintillating. They did not play a ranked opponent here at Autzen. You know, obviously Auburn, the USC game was a big game, winning at Seattle. And, you know, the Washington State game, however, 59,361. So that helped push it past last year. And, of course, let's not kid ourselves. A lot of people were looking at different, and it was like, look, once 2016 happened, even though when Willie Taggart was hired and kind of injected a little bit of life into the program after a disappointing 4-win season, I don't think anybody last year went into the season thinking, well, they'll probably contend for a playoff. And then this year, I would say expectations were, yeah, they should be in the running for the North, but despite the Auburn loss and the Arizona State heartbreaking defeat, which cost them a shot at the playoff, I would say the most rational and knowledgeable among Oregon fans look at this season as a 100% success. Destroying the North, walking away in a waltz, the incredible performance at Southern Cal, beating the Huskies there, you know, Stanford, almost an eternal thorn in the side of this program, to get the win down there, the performance of the defense, and of course it peaking with the fantastic top-to-bottom performance in bumping Utah to win their way to the Rose Bowl. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline, if you want to hang in, because we're working on getting Coach Graves on the line, but for later on, if you want to talk some NFL basketball, you know, with the Duck women now ranked second, the men 4, Pac-12 play starts Thursday and Friday, respectively. The NFL playoffs are set, NBA, whatever is on your mind, we've got the rest of the 4 o'clock hour to get to all of that. So, yeah, by the way, California won the Red Box Bowl, so that means all 3 years under Justin Wilcox, they've increased their win total, so good for him. All right, let's lock it up. Talk some Duck hoops off an impressive ending to the counting regular season and a nice show in this past weekend's exhibition. It's go time. Pac-12 play begins Friday here against Colorado. They are ranked number 2, one of 3 conference teams in the top 5 on Twitter. Use the handle at GoDucksKG. Kelly Graves joins us. Coach, always appreciate the time. How is your holiday season going?
Steve, it's been going great, man. I haven't talked to you in a couple weeks. Good to be back on. It was a nice holiday. Thank you for asking.
You know, I know at your place when it's Halloween, you guys go all out. So come Christmas time, you were in town 7 days in between games. Any special Christmas decorations or lights or Graves family traditions?
You know, we didn't do the lights this year. That's kind of hit and miss. All 3 boys did come back, so we like to do the inside of the house and make it look pretty festive. You know, we do have the team over a couple of times during the break because, unfortunately, they don't get to go home the entire time.
Right.
You know, so we try to make it as homey as we possibly can. But, yeah, it was really nice. It was really nice and relaxing, and we had a nice tune-up the other night, and like you said, it's go time, man. It's Pac-12.
You know, I want to get to that Kansas State game because since that Louisville loss, you'd cruised past South Dakota State, Long Beach State, UC Riverside, and while they're nice programs, K-State is a Power 5 team, an NCAA tournament team 3 of the last 4 years, and this game was over in the third quarter, and I thought aside from 3-point shooting, you guys are like excelled in all areas. How happy were you with the performance overall in that game?
Well, it seems like a long time ago, but at the time I remember being pretty pleased in every phase. I thought defensively we put a lot of pressure on them. We changed the tempo. We made them uncomfortable. Offensively on the boards, I thought we did a great job. You know, we moved the ball. I don't know how many assists we had, not very many turnovers. think it was 25-9,
yep.
Something like that, and eight of those turnovers were in the first half. So the third quarter in particular I thought was as good as we've played this year, you know, as good as any of those really good quarters against the USA team. So, yeah, I was real pleased. You know, I talked to the team about going into a break. You don't want to go into a break like that because you remember that last game, you know, kind of limping, so to speak. You want to put together a good effort and a good game to springboard you into to a nice, fun Christmas break. And then another good game coming out of it, you know, so you can get a little bit of momentum. But, yeah, Kansas State's a legit team. That's a team that's probably going to make the NCAA tournament. They got some star power that, you know, that gave us some trouble, but not really.
Yeah, and by the way, your memory was spot on. It was 25-9, which you'll take that assist to turnover ratio all day long.
All day, yep, all day.
So in that game, after she sat out against UC Riverside, played minimal minutes at Long Beach, you know, Satu was back. She seemed 100%. The numbers were solid. She scores at the rim, hit a couple of threes. I know it's kind of obvious, but just having her back healthy with all she does, as you call her, your unicorn, you want to talk about feeling good going into the break. How sweet was that?
Oh, it was really good. Really good to have her back. She's still not 100%. And, you know, just some stuff that's she's gonna have to work through. But no, she makes a difference. You know, and we talked about that openly with the team, and I'm going to ask a lot of her during this Pac-12 play. You know, she's got a chance to be a top five pick in this year's draft. Whether she goes or not is still up in the air, but, you know, she's obviously a talent. Guess what? She's got to set us apart from everybody else by her play. And she's going to be the matchup advantage in every game. And I just think she's got to take it to a next level. And I haven't seen it yet this year. I've seen it at times. During the USA game, I saw it, and a couple other times. But I've asked a lot of her and really challenged her. And I think her and Ruthie and Sabrina, I think they need to, you know, collectively, those three really lead this group and get us to where we want to go.
Talking hoops with Coach Graves. So I was at the K-State game where I sit on press row. We've got a perfect view of your bench. And I think this is telling. It's the fourth quarter. It's a blowout. So Sabrina, Boley, and Satu are sitting side by side. And I'm watching them, and they're talking. And the motions by what they were doing, you can tell they were talking about basketball. Coach, that level of communication and engagement, regardless of the score, how special is that on this team?
Well, I got special players, and they're ballers. They are.
Yeah.
Led by Sabrina. That kid's a baller, man, in every sense. She's a good student, obviously, graduates from U of O in 3 years, working on her master's degree. But make no mistake about it, she's here to play basketball. And, you know, and she's done so quite well. But, yeah, she just thinks the game, knows the game. And you know, and same with her teammates. I mean, and they're all into it. What I love to see is when some of our players were having big games, they're down there hooting and hollering and having a blast on the bench too. I think that's so good for team chemistry, and that's the kind of culture I know we have built here. So I really love this group, and I detected a little bit of boredom sometimes from these guys. We haven't just kind of put our foot on somebody's throat, you know, and we just kind of been putzing along, so to speak, in some of our games.
Well,
I think they're ready for the Pac-12. I think they're going to be really amped up and up for the challenge.
No, like I said, I enjoy watching all of you engage. Sometimes when it's a blowout, I watch half the game and half the bench.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
well, the one the other day, 80 points. You know, I've had a ton of people, Steve, ask me why we played that game. I tried to get a regular season game. Couldn't, you know, right after Christmas like that, because a lot of schools, you know, go into their conference play. And we had an extra exhibition because of the USA thing that was exempted. So I just thought, well, what a good way to kind of tune up after the break, get a local team in here. And I thought it worked out, but a lot of teams do that. I know Notre Dame last week had an exhibition game on the 21st. So
yeah,
it's
a couple
not that
people
unusual.
Yeah, a couple people asked me about that, and I said I would ask you, but you answered it already, so we're covered.
Hey, we're on the same wavelength, big guy. Even though you bumped me last time for that kid named Ionescu, it's okay. I'm a David Letterman fan. I understand how the guests get bumped when they run out of time. I gotcha.
All right, well, you know, my taste is impeccable. You got to give me credit there.
Hey, if I was going to get bumped by anybody, I'd rather it be her.
You know, a couple final thoughts for Coach Graves. We've talked about your offense, which is beyond unselfish, and the spacing. And in that K-State game, Erin Boley came out and she was just hitting threes. I mean, when the opposition defense now has to account from her from the get-go, when you think about Sabrina Sabully and your guards who could slash and the ability of your bigs, I mean, how serious can the case of pick your poison get for the opponent?
Well, that's what's made us so special. I think we can put five players on the floor that can score. And even if Erin isn't getting shots, and maybe not even having a great shooting night, you still got a garter. And so, and garter deep. So that just leaves a lot more room for Sabrina and Mignon to operate, for Ruthie inside, for Satu to drive. It all works together. Everybody's out there for a reason. But I think one of the things that's really made us, elite is I put five scorers on the floor at all times. And look at the production we're getting off our bench. Taylor Chavez has had a 25-point game. Jazz Shelley goes for 32, crying out loud. You know, Holly Winterburn, I think, is ready to step up and play real well. She's had a 17-point night. Liddy Giomi continues to impress. So, you know, we've got nine kids that can come out and get double figures on any given night, and a lot of teams can't say that.
You know, the last thing is now Colorado, who was voted dead last in the preseason media poll, won just two Pac-12 games.
Smart coaches are.
Yeah.
Right?
And they're 12-0. They're almost in the national rankings. And if you look at who they've beaten already, Wisconsin, they've won on the road at Wyoming, Colorado State. They won two games in a tournament in Louisiana. They just beat the Utes at Utah. Safe to say that, A, they fooled a lot of people and probably have everybody's attention now.
Oh, they do, and they've always had ours. I mean, I love JR. She played for me and coached with me. She's the head coach there.
Right.
So I know that program well. I watch pretty much every game because, you know, we like to talk before and after each game. Hey, listen, I know they're legit, and they're still relatively young. I think they lost some really good players last year, and everybody thought, oh, they're going to take a big hit. But deep down inside, I knew that chemistry was going to be better without those kids, and that's proven to be the case. So I'm just excited. We got a team rolling in here on the cusp of the national rankings, 12-0 to start league. I think our kids will be fired up and ready, and I know our fans will be. We want to continue to pack that place. I mean, we had 9,700 for an exhibition game the other day. I mean, come on, Steve. How cool is that?
Unbelievable.
It's really cool what's going on, over at Matthew Knight.
So, J.R. Payne played for you at St. Mary's, not Gonzaga, right?
Yep. Oh. No, she played for me at St. Mary's, and then when I left to go to Gonzaga, she came with me as an assistant coach. That was her first job. Green is green. And look at her now, man. She is just phenomenal. Phenomenal person. Great coach, but deep down inside, a phenomenal person and one of the four or five best point guards that I've ever coached. And that list includes Sabrina and Maite and Courtney Vandersloot. That's a pretty good list. She's on it.
I would say so. No, that's a great story. I love that aspect. Well, Coach, conference season starts Friday, 7 o'clock, Pac-12 Network on TV. Of course, we have the radio call. Man, we'll be talking because this Pac-12 season is going to be something special. On Twitter, use the handle at GoDucksKG. Coach, always our pleasure. Best of luck this weekend. Can't wait to talk again on Monday.
Me too, Steve. Thanks, buddy.
All right, take it easy. Yeah, that's a great story. J.R. Payne, he recruited to the West Coast. I think she's a Tennessee gal. But, you know, when we talked last year, that's right, she relocated. She was actually raised in B.C., So she was a point for St. Mary's, And when she was there with the coach, the Gaels made the big dance for the first time ever. You know, she was an all West Coast Conference player. And then she graduated in 99, Jordan coach with the Zags for 5 years before she started coming through the ranks. Boise State, Santa Clara. Then she became the head coach of Santa Clara 2014 and now has been running the Buffs since 2016. And like I said, when they got like 16 total points in votes. They were the consensus 12th place team in this conference. And they're 12-0 right now, and they've won a bunch of road games against some pretty good programs. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. What was that commotion, by the way, along the, was there a turnover? Or?
There was a Virginia had a diving snag of an interception, got the ball inside Florida Gator 40, and on the first play, they just went for like a 37, 38-yard touchdown pass into the back of the end zone, a beautifully thrown ball for the score, an extra point away from being tied at 7.
Cavs and the Gators. And, ooh, that's a nice throw. Nice catch. So, Virginia, who looked like they might be in a little bit of trouble now. By the way, this is a game where you're like, man, I should have taken the over. 11 and a half minutes in, it's 7-7. Like I said, it's 7-6, and it's 7-7. L'Orange Bowl. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let us take a break. Upon our return, we'll have a Coors Light update and more sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Garrity RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Garrity.com.
We had the situation last year. It was pretty obvious pass interference. In the broadcast, they're talking about this is pretty obvious pass interference. This should be reviewed because we have an implemented rule in for just this situation. And the fact that it doesn't happen, like, get rid of the rule then. Like, why do we have the rule? If you're not going to use it in that moment, you're never going to use it.
You think? That's Dan Orlovsky of ESPN. So they implemented a new rule. As we welcome you back to Sports Talk 95.3 The Score, Monday edition of the big program. Always great catching up with Coach Graves. It's, like I said, go time. Pac-12 play starts this week. And the Pac-12 women's, it's just silly. They have three of the top five, UCLA at 10. This Colorado team, who was supposed to be last, is 12-0, has climbed all the way to 30th in the national rankings. But anyway, like what Orlovsky says, they implemented a new rule based on a blatant circumstance. They, in essence, wanted to close a loophole as far as review, and then they'd said, well, we implemented a new rule, but we're not going to use it. So, by the way, here, want to have a good trivia question? Every single NFL fan knows the play. They could recite it, when it happened, who was involved. You remember the two guys from last year's Rams-Saints game who were involved? I wasn't even close. I had to go back, find the story, find the recap, find the replay, run it, write down the numbers, go to the roster, because these were not household names. The defensive back was Nickel Roby Coleman, and the receiver was Tommy Lee Lewis. It's like, oh, those guys. Yeah, I don't remember them at all. Not one stinking bit. But what's more frustrating, them not making the right call upon review? And for those, I know we broadcast the Seahawks games. I didn't care who won that game. I just would prefer that if a guy is running towards the end zone and somebody impedes him, it gets called. So what's more aggravating, them screwing up the call or then looking you in the eye and said, no, we reviewed it and we think they got it right? And it's like, no, you didn't.
I I don't know. I only saw like the one. Well, I didn't even see a replay of it during the game, so I can't even remember that. Like, hey, was it close? Was it this? Was it that? Was it a little bit of the offensive player engaging? I don't know. But can you imagine the outrage that would be coming from Niner fans and everybody on the other side?
Oh yeah, that's how you always have to look at it.
No, not even that. It's just if the NFL decides in the last 2 minutes, hold on, we're going to stop everything. We're actually going to review this. You're giving Seattle a free timeout. You're giving them more time to prepare for whatever last play that they want to come up with on fourth down, and then all of a sudden you're going to spend all this time to not make it pass interference or anything like that. Like, and then maybe Seattle comes up with something on fourth down and they win the game. Niner fans would be irate. Even if you do all of that and it's not a penalty and it's still fourth down from the 6 or from the 5 1/8-inch yard line or whatever, like, you're still livid that that happened, to waste all of that time over essentially nothing. All because Sean Payton wouldn't run the ball when he had a chance to win a game late. He decided to pass. Just a horrible decision that came from all of this.
So what gets my goat there is, first of all, fans are liars. They get upset about a call, and all you have to do is, like, for example, when Brady Breeze was not called for targeting, and then in the Clemson game, the LSU guy was called for targeting, and on and on and on. All you have to do is say, stop. You thought it wasn't targeting against Breeze. Stop. You thought it was targeting against LSU. Stop. What if you were rooting the other way and they called or didn't call? How pissed would you be? Because they're 50-50 calls. And I heard somebody, and I'll get back to the pass interference in a moment, bring up a really good point. What college needs to do now is rule that it could be targeting because of how the hit wound up, but without an ejection. Let's face it, we've seen targeting where a guy sees a player who is completely defenseless, not looking, lowers their head. It's like old school spearing, and is trying to hurt that person. That's targeting confirmed. Number 27 is ejected. I don't think the LSU player, I saw where it was targeting, even though Lawrence was coming down a bit. He used the crown of his helmet, but there was some level of incidental there. So I thought a 15-yard penalty, but no ejection might have been. So that seems like a logical next step in tweaking the options available to the officials on that call. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, but then you're starting to judge intent, and when you judge something in slow motion, everything looks intentional, and everything looks like, I mean, the Brady Breeze thing, I thought he was done. I was like, that's targeting, he's gone.
I thought the same exact
thing. Bye-bye, Brady. Like, the targeting in the LSU-Oklahoma game is the definition of why you eject players for targeting, because it was a dirty, dumb, blindside hit directly to the side of a guy's head.
Right, that one, but
The one in the Clemson game looked like a tackle. Like, right, that looks like, yeah, okay, it's a little violent. He's coming in high. That's a tackle. Like, that's kind of just what it is. I think it happened 2 years ago in the Oregon-Washington game, where both players had someone who was disqualified for the same tackle, which was, I'm coming in to tackle a guy. I'm doing the right thing. Oh, the quarterback dropped it the last second, and suddenly my face and his helmet are at the same level, even though he's 7 inches taller than me, and there's nothing I could do about it. Like, if you start trying to slow things down and judging,
I understand, but I think there are times when it's like, okay, that's intent. And if it's not, and by the way, again, it's such a slim margin, and, you know, unless the technology is available to where you could measure what's in a man's heart, you're never going to get it 100% right. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a call and bring in Ken. Ken, good evening. Thanks for calling. How's it going?
Hey, Steve. How are you guys?
All right, what's up?
Good weekend of football, both college and professional. But, you know, you hit on a very interesting topic with the reviews, the replays. Now, I think in the second semifinal, where the ejection and targeting was given, they didn't even call a penalty on that play, did they?
Well,
They reviewed it, but there wasn't a flag thrown initially on that play, was there? I don't remember there being that, which I think that's a bit egregious if they're going back and reviewing it. And I get the whole intent and maliciousness, but like you guys have said, I thought that was a football play, and even worse yet, I think it's akin to your pass interference call, going back and reviewing that. That dropped, or that fumbled ball that was returned that they overruled, I thought that was horrible. And they came out today, I don't know if you saw that, and said, oh yeah, they got that wrong on the field. I mean, that doesn't nothing now, but good grief. I mean, in that moment, they talk about making a football play. I mean, the guy catches and takes two steps isn't good enough, but there's been some definite errors I saw. At least I thought. I mean, it's hard to judge that, being just the armchair referee that I am. But good grief, this weekend there were some missed calls and some things that were pretty bad that didn't look that way, but they were called another way, and just really affected games, I thought.
No, I agree with you, especially on that scoop and score that was pulled off the board. I appreciate the call, Ken. For anybody who didn't see that or doesn't know what we're talking about, if you weren't glued to that Clemson game. So the catch is made by Clemson's receiver, Ross. The defensive back of Ohio State, Okuda, he strips it. I mean, he catches the ball. It looked like he took one, two, three steps. Jordan Fuller picks it clean and runs in for the touchdown. And you know what the interesting thing was? If you were watching the game, the network rules expert said he was confident. He says they're going to overturn it and it's going to be incomplete. And I'm like, really? Because the bottom line is, a couple people said, if that is a play in the end zone and he makes a catch, has control, takes a step and goes out of bounds, one step, it's a touchdown. I was cheering it because I was only rooting for my bet. But in the real world, I think that was a brutal, brutal overturn.
Yeah, I don't know who the rules guy is for ESPN, but he is one of the better ones that have been plucked from college or the NFL.
And he was sure.
He was adamant. He was defiant. He's like, no, I'm looking at this. I'm not quite sure. You watch it in slow motion. Yeah, it looks like he's got possession. He's got it for an hour and a half or whatever. But he's like, you speed it up. You watch it at full time. I'm not quite sure he caught it.
He played the football move thing.
Right. Yeah. I'd want to see him take another step. I'd want to see him dive.
Run 62 yards.
Right. You know, I want to make sure that he's brought down to the ground and survives the ground with the ball to make sure that he made the catch before calling this incomplete. But boy, he was adamant that was coming the other way. That was surprising.
I thought he was out of his mind. Then they overturned it. I remember looking at my wife like, yeah. It's like I'm really happy with, cringeworthy. All right. Let's take another venture to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, bring in James. James, good evening. How's it going?
It's going good, Steve. It's all about you, though, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm selfish when I'm betting. I really don't care.
Yeah, well, we know that. So real quick, so what game was that last year where it was an Oregon offensive lineman, I feel like, that, or maybe it was defense, but it was a lineman for sure, that ducked his head. It was going to make a block and got called for targeting and kicked out of the game. You guys remember that?
Vaguely. I do not have the details available at my frontal lobe.
No, for sure, but that's just my point on that is like, that's the thing when you slow it down to, like, you know, the minuscule nanosecond. It's like, what was that Laker game this weekend where, you know, obviously the ball got tipped out of LeBron's hands, but they slowed it down.
Oh, my God.
The slowest frame you could ever slow it down to. And, yeah, it got tipped out of his hands, but it, like, rolled off his fingertip at the last second. And it's like, the guy was saying that in the 100 years of basketball, that would have been called, you know, the Lakers ball every time, but you slow it down that way. Okay, yeah, the ball got directed in a different direction, so you could tell it got tipped out of his hand, but it just rolled off, the last fingertip. So, I don't know. Review to me, it bugs me. I'm a Niners fan, obviously. I thought that it was not really a PI. I thought that the tight end engaged him initially, and when he rolled away, it's just like you're going to break that down into frame by frame and then have the refs decide the game at the last second when, you know, the Seahawks had 10,000 chances before that to win or to not be down 13-0. I mean, there's so many plays that go either direction. The late hit they called on the Niners center that made them have to kick a field goal versus getting a first down.
Yep.
You know, it goes both ways. So it's not down to the officials. don't. It's just like a kicker that misses a kick at the last second. Don't let it come down to that kicker having to kick that last second field goal.
No, right? I agree with you that
60 minutes before that to do something. So do it.
No, I agree. The contempt you might show for an officiating crew after a game doesn't mean they cost your team the game or gave your team the game. There were 140 snaps in that game where there was an opportunity for things to swing a different direction.
That's right. Go Niners, baby. Woo!
All right, take it easy, James. Was it Drayton Carlberg who got kicked out of a game? Last year.
That was, I think, the UW game 2 years ago. I think that's what it might have happened to him again, but that does what James brought up. It sounds vaguely familiar if somebody was like on an interception return or something like that, like put down a block and then got called for targeting after. But I think it was Carlberg against UW who was coming in to sack Browning, and Browning at the last second, because he was coming in from the left side of the line, and Browning is, you know, he's going after his blind side. Browning at the last second decided he was going to run, ducked and turned, and all of a sudden Carlberg, who is, you know, a lot bigger than Browning, is looking down on him when he makes the tackle, when if Browning is, you know, a half second slower in turning around, it's just a big hit to his blind side.
Yeah, when you bring it up, there are multiple stories about improper use of targeting, and you get Jalen Johnson of Washington, who also got ejected for targeting on her after Carlberg had gotten ejected for targeting against Browning. So it drives you nuts. Yeah, that's right. Feliu got ejected in the USC game this year. It's when the crown of the helmet is used, it's dangerous, and you have to find a way to use a deterrent properly. But is it more options with the officials? Boy, does that seem like a bad idea right off the top of my head. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. What do you say we take our final break of this first Monday back and our next to last show of 2019? We'll come back with the tweet of the day and a wrap-up, 95.3 The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Hi, host Steve. Welcome to the Coors Light Frostbeard Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment that is made to chill. Coming up next from the Oregon Sports Network, a very special Rose Bowl special from our friends at the Oregon Sports Network from Learfield ING College, a name that I know that I don't even have to read off of a piece of paper that I gave to Steve to hand earlier. But Jerry, Jorgie, Joey, Terry Johns as well, I believe all of them are down in downtown LA, and they're doing a special Rose Bowl show that's coming up right after this. So stay tuned. You'll enjoy. But to our tweets of the day today, a lot of action from the Rose Bowl. Oregon was getting their team picture taken. Things are being delivered. Fields are being painted. At Brett_McMurphy tweeting out, the dozens and dozens of pallets of Coors Light have arrived in advance of Wednesday's Rose Bowl game. I'm looking at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, should have counted these earlier, 7 layers of gigantic Coors Light beers that are all stacked up on top of each other, and at the Jason Kirk tweeting that saying, why are they only expecting 2 Wisconsin fans to attend? It's very true. From the 2011 Rose Bowl, went down there, and the Wisconsin fans that were pre-gaming and having the time of their lives at that time, they can put down some beer. A fantastic story from BFF of the show, at Tyson Alger, on Ifo Ekwe Olamu, what he's done in the 5 years since his last Rose Bowl. You remember he tore his every ligament in his knee and dislocated it during a practice leading up to the Rose Bowl against Florida State, and he was never able to play in the NFL. It's just an incredible story from Tyson Alger that you're going to want to read and check out. It is well worth the time. What else do we have here? Oh, our tweet of the day. It's time for that from @Pac-12 Network. It's a video a lot of you may have had people call in and talk to us about it. Warren Williamson from the Rose Bowl was saying this is an incredible video. You got to check it out. But it is Joey Harrington sending a message or giving a video message to Patrick or Justin Herbert, who watched and listened to this video message. And you get to see Justin's reaction to Joey's message. It's just incredible. And grab a tissue. Somebody's going to be cutting onions. It'll get very dusty very suddenly around where you are. Justin gets a little emotional as well, which kind of makes everything else so much more emotional. So thanks to @Pac-12 Network for putting together this video and this content. It's spectacular. Follow us on Twitter @953thescore, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Steve is on Twitter @sportstalk953. I am on Twitter @RickNodgers. Do not be a jerk. Just do it. Choose kindness. Steve, back to you.
Choose kindness.
Well, all right. If you insist, as we welcome you to the home stretch of Sports Talk on a Monday. I guess tomorrow would be a better day to go over the NFL playoffs in depth. By the way, during the break, Joe Burrow, another touchdown pass.
Wow.
second half.
I have never picked a better time or a football game to take a nap to than that game at that time. When I decided to take the nap, I think it was 35-14.
Jeez.
And I was like, this game is not worth staying up for. I'm very tired. There's going to be a better football game that's on later.
I left.
You left?
I made a note. When it got to be close to halftime, I was like, I got some food shopping I needed to do. I needed things. And I just like, I'm taking off now. I'll be back. I had a list. I ran over to Freddy's on West 11th. And I was like, you know, if all of a sudden I'm noticing I could just hustle back and it just keep getting worse.
I literally fell asleep on the couch. I threw my hood up on my sweatshirt. I had a little blanket over my feet to keep them warm, turned the volume down a little bit. I was out for an hour and I woke up, I think just before, like just as they were coming back from halftime, I was like, wow, 49? How many more times? Wow, they were all Joe Burrow touchdowns? I didn't miss anything. It was just the same thing over and over again.
And by the way, after LSU's opening drive, it was like stealing. They didn't even put up a fight. And then after the Sooners looked lost for a second straight possession, finally their D rose up. They got it back. Hurts hit Lamb, who's his stud, who announced he's going pro for 50-yarder. Then they score to make it 7-all. And at 14-7, I hate playing the official suck card, but Jaden Hasselwood was so blatantly interfered with by LSU's Derek Stingley, and then the refs confer, and they come away, and they still eat the flag. That just drives me nuts. And naturally, Burrow makes them pay with one of his 17 touchdown passes to Justin Jefferson. When he caught his fourth touchdown pass, there were 10 minutes left in the half. He had 9 catches, 186 yards, 4 touchdowns. So I did what I like to do, like on opening day of MLB. Like if a guy hits 2 homers, drives in 7 runs, you extend out the season he's going to have.
Thousands of RBIs, hundred homers.
328 homers. So at that point for that game, I actually went and grabbed my calculator. He was on pace for 26 catches for 531 yards and 11 touchdowns. That didn't happen, but that is a quarter and 5 minutes. 9 catches, 186, 4 touchdowns. Yeah. Oh my God.
And then at the start of the OSU game, when I thought they were going to run away with it and avenge their 31-0 loss from, 2016 or whatever? When they got blown, I was like, oh, this is going to go the opposite way. Ohio State's running away with it. I wasted a nap on a bad football game for a worser football game. I could have been napping right now.
Right through, still.
No, it was a great game.
But one thing about Clemson, and I'm not comparing the unit, I'm comparing the productivity all year long. If you know, one of the things we talked about was Oregon's tenacity in defending the red zone. And it's amazing if you can give up three instead of seven. I mean, imagine in that first half, if even two of those field goal drives were touchdowns, that's another 8 points. They ain't coming back in that game. But three trips to the red zone at critical moments, they bowed up, they made stops on third down, held them to 3 points, and the incredible thing about it was there was 9 minutes to go in the half, and the offensive production, the yards Ohio State had posted, were more than Clemson had given up on average for a whole game, And so I forgot what the exact number was, but Clemson did not give up. That was it. Ohio State had more yards in the whole first half than Clemson gave up in any game. In any game, that 296.
They were literally the best team they've played all year. The ACC was that bad. I mean, yeah, the defense is going to be good. But yes, when you finally face a good team, they're going to smash all of your season-long records.
But they figured it out. You know, they played Texas A&M gave up 289. They held South Carolina to 174. I know they're not a really good team. They're a bowl team. But 174 yards against an SEC team. They held Wake Forest, Clemson this year, 105 total yards. Boston College, 177. Syracuse, 189. I know that there are bad teams, but these are major programs in major conferences. And they got it figured out. Now, I would hate to be either defense in this championship game and have to stop the other guys. Anyway, fun stuff. Have a magnificent Monday, and we'll be back with you for, well, I guess Tuesday, for Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.